So hello everyone officially now, and welcome to our blessing call on this wonderful day of July the 3rd, where those of us in the United States are looking forward to a day off, maybe some swimming, sunning, barbecue, bicycle riding, playing with the grandkids, whatever. And I hope you're getting ready for a wonderful day to celebrate freedom. I thought that would be a great topic for us to talk about today, because it is really, really intimately connected to how we are able to benefit from the opportunities that have been provided all around us in life. And sometimes we don't give ourselves the freedom that we really need. And too often we fall into the unfortunate ditch of blaming other people for the freedom we lack, when really all around us are wonderful opportunities, wonderful new ideas, ways, places, and means for changing our mind, changing our hearts. As Yeshua said, change your heart, you change your life. And we really are responsible for the freedom we claim. And yes, there are unfortunately in this world still some terrible tyrannical governments that impede the spirit of freedom on the part of people. But I have never seen one successful revolution in the history of mankind that was not preceded by several decades of people just beginning to assume their rights of freedom, undeclared and unofficially, until they had become a stronger people, capable of taking a political stand on freedom. You see, the thing is, it has to start in you. It has to start in your heart, in your mind, in your principles, in your values, and in the confidence you have in the good law and your relationship to the Creator. So I think this is just a wonderful day to take that on. But I would, since we have not had a chance to speak with one another lately, I would like to take on some calls today and just see how you're doing. We have a caller from area code 407, and you're on. Hello, you're on. Now, you may need to unmute your own telephone if you had it muted first. Hello, we can hear you. Are you there? I hear your telephone rustling around, so obviously all you need to do is speak. Okay, well, I'll wait until you get your thoughts together. And I see that Tom has pressed his unmute. So, Tom, in Chicago, how are you?
I'm well, Glenda. Thanks for asking. I'm feeling much better lately. I've had solid foods for a couple of days and approaching feeling human again, and it's wonderful.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm calling. I don't even know how to phrase the question, but seeing as how Independence Day for this country is upon us, that the whole question of separation versus oneness, we obviously live with a lot of concepts of separation. We have national boundaries still. You know, we look at people by races, even if we're one family. You know, and even really in the basic sense of gender separation. And so, for me at least lately, the theme has been trying to get closer to the sense of oneness, which is source, certainly, and what we really are, but to, at the same time, embrace our individuality, which is as well proper. I think that's why we're here, to express love, the love that we are in our individual ways, and I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, Tom, I think there's only one natural boundary in life that has a right to create a natural hierarchy in life. All the others are artificial, arbitrary, and usually misapplied and misunderstood. The one natural boundary, the one natural basis for hierarchy is simply responsibility. Those who assume a greater and larger responsibility take on a greater spectrum of leadership. And when it comes to national boundaries, as you know, this country was not founded to dramatize its boundaries, but to be a land that openly invited people from all over the world to come and find a new life here. And I still think that that idea embraces the founding principles of this country. But as we have become a more complex people with more complicated ways of administering life, we have found that some people just simply assume responsibility, not only more easily, but more honestly. Some do it more, some just bully their way to the top, and that's not genuine responsibility. Some just have inherited money and they dramatize their elitism without any responsibility, and that is not in keeping with the nature of our nation or the principles on which it was formed. But really, what we have to come to finally accept is the unique correlation between freedom and responsibility. If we had good parents, I think we were probably taught this as children. For example, we could have freedom to go out and play on our own as long as we didn't throw baseballs into the windows of our neighbors. We could have more unsupervised play as long as we demonstrated a sense of responsibility in our play. And parents would reel us in to the degree that we could not accept that level of responsibility. And, of course, our parents had seniority over us, both by nature and legally, simply because they had been around longer, they sponsored us, they cared for us, and they had the responsibility. And I think that ultimately the real, from a truly loving, sane perspective, the only real, well, boundary, if you will, is that of responsibility. And we can even attach this to one of the important teachings of Yeshua. He said to the apostles once, they asked him, they said, well, why have you taught us all of these things? And to the others you speak in parables. And he basically said, well, they don't have the ears to hear or the minds to understand. They can only receive what they receive. I have given these things to you because I see in you the responsibility to handle these things and to apply these things. Of course, he didn't mean it to always be a boundary. He meant for his delegation of responsibility to the apostles, along with the greater knowledge, to eventually expand into the education and delegation of responsibility to more and more people as they earned it. And I think there's no escaping the fact, Tom, that we have to earn our responsibility. And in earning our responsibility, we are honoring our freedom. And there are a lot of people who misapply this, they misinterpret it, they use it to justify political agendas, they use it to justify prejudice or artificial hierarchies. And until we grow up, until we grow into our wisdom, I suppose there will always be a little bit of that. But there's no escaping the fact that just as children cannot be given freedom that exceeds their responsibility, so too it is with everyone and all of us. Does that help?
It does. And I think when he was speaking of the apostles, I think I understand that it wasn't that he was excluding the others. It was just the practical reality that you have to be sort of close to the concept in order to understand even the language of the next step. Where
exactly, and you have to have demonstrated your willingness to be responsible for this in relation to your fellow man. Okay. And let's think about a horrible thing that we have all had to deal with since 1945, and that is the knowledge of how to build an atomic bomb. And the question is, were we really responsible enough to have that knowledge? That shaped the whole rest of the 20th century, even into the 21st century.
Oh, sure.
You see?
And all the children. I mean, I was.
And all the children. And everything to come. And what just happened in Fukushima. And what might happen in Nebraska. Or what might happen in other nuclear reactors. Did we really have the responsibility to handle that level of knowledge? Well, I think we were not ready to handle that responsibility, frankly, demonstrated by the fact that our first act of that, of using it, was to annihilate millions of people.
I agree, although I think that when things like that happen, those are our lessons as well. You know,
absolutely, but then you see, we have, if we exceed our responsibility by asserting our freedom, we have to eventually reel our freedom in so that our responsibility catches up to it.
Yeah, and eventually recognize that there are no bad guys as such.
Exactly. There's only points where our freedom has exceeded our responsibility.
I like
that. And I think the national border issues, again, get back to that. It's not that people from other nations are not still welcome. The question is, are they coming in order to be responsible citizens?
Mm-hmm.
And so we still have to measure. I think we will always measure freedom and responsibility as a cofactor of progress.
Mm-hmm.
We progress according to our freedom, but we also progress according to our responsibility. And find a way of balancing both of those. But anyway, Tom, thanks for bringing that up. That's a very potent subject, and it helped me to add to our conversation today. So I see someone else trying to get in from area code 802. You're on.
Hi, Glenda. This is Cecilia Blair.
Hello, Cecilia.
Hello. Wow, I'm on. I wanted to bring up that I think that there's a really powerful paradox around freedom, and that when we're thinking in the usual terms of I, me, mine, and I want, and I need, and I must have, then we're an ego consciousness. And from that point of view, there is no real experience of freedom, or none of the greater experience of freedom that one has when out of that, in love, in our own nature as love. But when we're in our nature as love, we don't have we experience freedom, and yet that experience is contingent upon remaining in our nature as love and acting accordingly. So
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to bring that up.
I totally agree. Cecilia, we all complain about the forces and the situations and financial limitations and agendas and protocols and political beliefs and so forth that imprison us. There is no one who imprisons us more than we do ourselves.
Yes.
We are really our prison warden. And the ways in which we imprison ourselves are the very ways that keep us from receiving the blessings of life. And if you'll hold that thought for just until we get there, that's really the core of what I want to focus on today. So thank you for bringing that up. And I'm going to open the line for Anne. Hi, Anne. I see you're on. Just a minute. There, you're on.
Hi, Yvonne here from Holland.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Glenda. I wanted to ask or comment about having a pure heart and wanting to serve and feeling worthy to also receive abundance. Can you comment on that in any form?
Oh, of course. Well, I think that having a pure heart is really the key to freedom. And so I think you've really touched upon the ultimate answer to our freedom, because, you see, we limit ourselves both from abundance and from freedom for fear that we are either unworthy of it, we don't deserve it, we haven't earned it, or perhaps we would abuse it. A person who lives in a pure heart is like a child. If you remember back to when you were a child, you would walk into a store with your mother, and there wasn't anything you didn't want to touch. So in fact, it was your mother that said, now don't touch that, and don't touch that. I'm sorry, but no. And you would say, but it's pretty. I want to touch it. And you didn't in any way intend to hurt it. You just wanted to touch it. Well, you see, when we come from a pure heart, we don't see boundaries. These boundaries actually come essentially from our own judgments.
Mm.
As Yeshua said in Love Without End, the source of all separation is judgment.
Mm.
And the source of all non-performing and non-constructive, irresponsible boundaries comes from judgment as well. Now, the reason I discerned non-responsible boundaries is that I was referring to prejudice. I was referring to a sense of alienation, a sense of, I don't want anything to do with that person, or I don't want anything to do with this, or I don't like this. You know, these negative opinions that we get about different things in life, those all come from our judgments.
Mm.
When we are not judging, we have a pure heart.
Yeah.
It's really as simple as that.
Yeah.
And if you'll hold that thought also until I get into the core of my message today, I'll show you how this connects to abundance. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for speaking up, Anne. And we do have someone now from area code 802. I don't have a name, but hello. Just a minute, I've got to bring you on. The mute didn't stick. You must have your own telephone muted, because I try to unmute you and it doesn't stick. Now you're on. Area code 802. Okay. Well, I'll give you a couple more minutes to think about what you've got to say. We don't hear any voices here, so perhaps you changed your mind. I'm going to... just wait a minute here, and I'll be looking on my dashboard to see if anybody else has come on. Since that person did not come on, there's someone here from area code 760, and you're on.
Okay. Hi, Glenda. My name's Teresa.
And hi, Teresa.
Hello. I've been enjoying the calls. I couldn't come on the last two, but I've been really appreciating what you've been saying, and I'm getting a lot out of them. Also, I think for myself, it's like this year, I really want this year to be the freedom for myself, freedom of past negative feelings about certain people in my life. You know, I just want to have forgiveness and freedom of any kind of sense. Just hold a space so I can have that freedom, because you were just saying about how it imprisons us, and that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've worked on this, and I've worked on it, and I work on it, and it just seems like there's just these last traces, you know, of this lack of forgiveness in myself for certain people in my life, and I just don't want to have it anymore.
I understand, and it's very good that you've come to the point of realizing that you are your own prisoner.
I am.
And we all are. We all are, and it's partly because we do not optimistically and cheerfully embrace change. You know, we all have experienced times which we regret, or times when something or someone offended us or hurt us or pushed us away, or did not meet our needs, and we drew boundaries between ourselves and that other person. Well, in the long run, those boundaries we drew at the moment were really not the things that imprisoned us. What imprisoned us were the permanent attitudes that we developed about those situations, the attitudes that we began to identify with. See, the thing is, when something or someone hurts us, we naturally, it's just a law of nature to see it as something that does not belong in our close, immediate sphere of life. For example, if you discover that you're allergic to tomatoes, you just don't eat tomatoes anymore. But if you take it one step further and you begin to hate tomatoes, then you've attached tomatoes to your attitude. And you literally cannot disconnect from them. Then you will develop an allergy every time you see a tomato. You don't have to eat a tomato. You could see one. Or you could see someone eating a tomato on television and break out an allergy. You see?
Yes, I do.
And so it's not the thing or the person itself that creates the distress and true alienation. It's the things we identify with that prevent us from healing. It's just like if you're coming down with a cold. I really highly recommend that you never say, "I have a cold." I would recommend that you say to yourself, "Boy, these look like symptoms of a cold. I think I'm going to create a different set of feelings and symptoms. I think I'm going to eat some good food. I think I'm going to have some rest. I think I'm going to drink some water. I think I want to create a whole different experience for myself."
Oh, yeah.
You see, the minute you identify with that cold, you try to push it away and you can't.
Right.
We can't push away anything we've come to identify with. And this is what happens when we begin to blame external forces and sources and people too heavily for what's happening in our life, whether it's just our computer that doesn't work, or whether it's some group that we belong to that no longer benefits us. We bring those toxic feelings in with us, and we can't let go of those toxic feelings. And it's just like we've stepped in tar or chewing gum. That chewing gum keeps following us everywhere we go.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So really, the way around that is to realistically, pragmatically acknowledge that we do not function well in the proximity of certain things, but it doesn't mean we can't forgive, love, and bless those things. We have a lot of coyotes that live in the gully around our house. And we have a lot of rattlesnakes down there. Well, they do their work in nature, and I think they're quite lovely and they're quite beautiful. And based on the harm that they've done in my life, I would have a lot of reasons to dislike both of them. But I don't, because I would be really dishonoring God's law and God's creation to not see their place in nature. I just don't want them in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. If you'll read in the Beloved, read the Beloved again, where it talks about our ego structure being built out of those things we have too toxic, we have agreed to in a toxic way and identified with instead of ourselves. Then it also goes into a very powerful passage about when working with someone just perpetually doesn't work out, it doesn't mean we're not to love that person or love ourselves or bless that person. We're simply to recognize that it's not our time to work together.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in God's order, in the order of timing, to work together. I know you've probably noticed that at times in your life, you've benefited more by living in one part of the country than another part of the country, or by having one type of career versus another type of career. Even your family dietary habits were different when children were in the family versus the empty nest, when you now had the freedom to completely redesign your diet to fit what you should be eating as a 40-something person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, it doesn't mean that we're now to hate pancakes.
Mm-hmm.
We could still see kids eating pancakes and think, boy, those tasted so good when I was 6 years old.
Mm.
And not want them today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
To all things, there is a time and a place. And everything is in this universe for some reason. As Tom mentioned, in some cases, the things we think are bad may be here to challenge our learning or our level of responsibility or our ability to discern and make appropriate choices for our life. You know, the thing is, if some of these negative things in the world did not exist, how would we ever explore and fulfill our ability to make a positive choice?
Mm.
And how fulfilling would that choice ever be? You see, God has given us a whole rainbow. And the rainbow has an infinite possibility. And sometimes some colors fit us, sometimes they don't. Sometimes we gain peace and bliss from the darkness because it allows us to sleep and to be less stimulated. Sometimes the light benefits us more. We have opportunities to choose. And in choosing, we refine our character. We refine our goals. We refine who we are in life. And if there were not negative choices, then the power of the positive choice would not be nearly so meaningful. I think back many times to the presence of Judas in the life of Yeshua.
Mm-hmm.
Yeshua said that he was there electively to perform the function he performed. And you see, Judas was actually part of a big choice that Yeshua had to make, because Judas was pro-political. He was pro-political power. He was pro-logical continuation of the Jewish heritage. He was a good little structured Jewish boy who had inherited a great affinity for the laws and the legal structure of the history of the Jewish people. And he was part of the desire of the people to reassert themselves against Rome militarily and politically, which is why he set up Yeshua for the arrest and the betrayal. He didn't mean to betray him at all. And Yeshua knew he would do that. And Yeshua could have circumvented that even. The dark forces came to tempt Yeshua and to say to him, but you know, Lord of the cosmos, Lord of the universe, you can circumvent all of this. Why would you stay in this condition? And Yeshua stayed in that condition because it gave him the opportunity to make a choice. You see, when we make a choice, we are doubly, triply, quadruply, actually exponentially reinforced in the positive nature of that which we've chosen. If we choose something positive when there's nothing before us but positive things to choose, it's like being in the Garden of Eden, la-ti-da. Every day is sunshine and roses, and so what? We have not perfected our being through the choosing of who we are, through the choosing of what we do. Now, your question brought up we've actually moved to the time where I have to really sew up this message and get us into the blessing. So I want to do that now. But it really brings us down to the power of choice. So often, especially when the events in the world are full of challenging or negative change, we think we're boxed in and we think, I don't want to change because all the change going on is bad. So we freeze and we don't change. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, do we lock ourselves into circumstances when we say that. You see, it's not what goes on in the external world that determines what happens to you. It's what you do about it that determines what happens to you. And sometimes we get the opportunity to be in an extremely positive, prosperous flow of change, such as existed in the United States in the teens, after World War I and to the time of the great crash on the stock market. There was just a huge spirit of optimism. And you had everyone from farmers bracing up their crops through the commodity market to teachers buying stock in the stock market. Everyone was benefiting in the prosperity of America. And then suddenly, the crash occurred. We went into the Great Depression of the 30s. And you would think that that would have just stopped everything. Actually, it was very, very distressing and very hard. But at that point in time, our American spirit was still so strong that if people needed jobs, they would move. They would relocate. In other words, they stayed mobile. Or they would invent something new. Or they would simply join together and serve a community need to help their fellow man. And the result was we had more inventions, more millionaires, more discoveries, more progress, and more social progress toward equality in that period of time than in the affluent period that preceded it. So, if you really look statistically at it, all that is necessary is change. But we stop embracing change when we become afraid. Fear generates, traditionally speaking, in the jargon of the popular psychology. Now, trained psychologists know that there's more to this than just two options. But in popular psychology, we talk about fear hits. We either fight or flee. In other words, we either run or we confront. The fact is, there's really it's a complex situation, but if you boil it down to the essential options, there's a third option. And that's the option most of us take, which is freeze. We stop embracing change because we're afraid that if we move to the right or the left, the negative changes going on in the world will catch us in their undertow. And so we don't change. And the biggest even though we're not having anywhere near the hardship that our grandparents had in the Great Depression, the physical hardship, we're having actually probably more emotional hardship today than they had, because we're looking at what's going on in the world and we're freezing. They didn't. They didn't freeze. They didn't imprison themselves. If they needed to move from Oklahoma to California, they did it. If they needed to work in the orange orchards, they did it. If they needed to work together as communities, they did it. In other words, they flowed with the change. They made new choices. They made new positive applications for their life. And one of the interesting things, really, statistically, is that an important factor that pulled us out of the Great Depression were the great comedians in Hollywood of the 40s. They got us to laugh. They got us in this state of mind where we could see the humor in all things. And by embracing the humor, we could embrace the change. We could deal with the change. Now, one of the reasons we get locked into our inability to forgive, the way we permanentize our negative attitudes, is we blame others for our inability to change. The fact is, nobody can change you but you. If you don't want to change, nobody can change you. God could send you all the rain in heaven and your crops won't grow. If you don't want them to grow and if you won't change, if you have an attitude that I'm not going to change, and we can really, really get into this, these locked in fixed attitudes, and nothing anyone or God does will handle that until you change. This is essentially the story of Job. If you ever care to read that book, I know it can be a little depressing, but it's also beautiful. And the result of the book is beautiful if you know what to look for. You see, Job tried to, when hardship hit Job, he tried all of the protocols he was familiar with. Everything from taking things to the altar, prayers, asking for forgiveness, doing chores for others. In other words, everything he had already known would work. The one thing he wouldn't do is change. And it wasn't until he finally let go of all the old stuff that he was clinging to, and he was willing to embrace change, that all the blessings of God rained upon him again. His life was made full and complete, and he was ready to absorb, at that point, all the blessings that were being offered to him. So my question to you is, how open are you for change? Are you simply trying to create a perpetuation for old patterns? Simply wanting to be blessed for the continuity of old things that don't work anymore? Or are you ready to change? Are you ready to receive something new? Obviously, if you've gotten into a position where something doesn't work, you need to look at the fact that it doesn't work. And are you willing to be at that point? And are you willing to say, it really doesn't matter if that person hurt me and I have a grudge on that person? The fact is, that was then and now is now, and that's all completely irrelevant to what will work right now. What will work now? What do I want in my life now? What will make me feel good now? Where will I find my prosperity now? How can I love and serve now? Where is my love now? What brings me joy now? Because now is the only place you ever live. It's the only place you will ever know. It's the only place you will ever reach God. And I promise you one thing. You cannot change. You cannot grow. You cannot receive abundance or blessings from any place that you are not. And the only place you are is now. You are not back in that place where you once had success, or where you once lost your home, or you once lost a friend, or you once felt sad, or you once were a child. You're not there now. You're here now. You can only receive blessings. You can only receive change. You can only receive good and prosperity and new opportunities from where you are. And now is where you are. And so, as we celebrate freedom tomorrow, it all begins by being here now. Realizing that from the place where we are now, all freedom, all opportunity, all abundance, all friendship is newly available to us. To resemble and who we are now, conform to our present needs and desires, and supply the desires of our heart. With that, we begin our blessing. Now, I need to take one extra minute because I know that we possibly have some new people on the call today based on some emails I've received. And in case you were not the recipient of our introductory email, just because you may have been invited by friends, I want to say please sign up for the blessing because then you will get our introductory emails and our follow-up emails about what to do after your blessing to maximize it. But the thumbnail picture for receiving it is please take your shoes and socks off and have your feet on the ground. In the summertime weather, if you can be on your patio or outside, all the better. The more you're connected with the earth, the better. Because the blessing comes through the restoring of our wholeness in this moment of now. It allows us to be here now, connected to the cosmos, connected to the earth, and to all things that we are in present time, in this now moment. The Holy Spirit will pour through your head into the earth and back from the earth, back through your body. Yeshua will join you in your heart. Some people feel him touch their feet or touch the top of their head. And he is the one who brings the blessing of the Holy Spirit. The blessing of the Holy Spirit is actually what heals you. It is that which makes you whole. It's that which connects you with the equilibrium of the cosmos, the earth, the solar system, and everyone and everything around you, to take you back from all of these off-center positions you may have adopted in life so that you are restored to your personal equilibrium. And from that, your wholeness is restored, and from your wholeness, then other issues that you have in life may be appropriately and wholesomely addressed for their increased betterment. And for some of you, there may be a sudden, powerful healing. For others, it may come in increments, in degrees, over the next few days or weeks. Return back for other blessings. They're free. They only cost you a phone call and a few minutes of your time. And what would you give to be here now and to receive this? So I ask that you be in your love and in your presence and receive. Allow your attention to drop into your heart and simply pray the prayer of your being, whatever that is, however you choose to pray, whether energetically, with words, with feelings. Some people pray with movement and expression. Whatever prayer is for you, pray, but do not pray with your mind, for your mind is incapable of being here now. It was built to deal with the past and project the past as a pattern into the future, and that's the anatomy of your perpetual problems. So do not pray from your mind. Simply go into your heart and be there. If no words come, then simply let the presence in your heart be the prayer. I will pray my prayer to Yeshua, and then for about 3 minutes, he will conduct energy through you. At the end of that 3 minutes, I want you to go and rest without thinking and assimilate the blessing. And I will let you know when the conduction of energy is complete. And at that point, I will speak no more. You go and rest for 7 minutes. So I'll give you my farewell now, but I'm only just now beginning the blessing. Dear Yeshua, Lord of the cosmos, brother of all mankind, the one who walks beside us and shows us all that we are, all that we can be, and gives us courage to be here now, laying aside whatever has gone before, that we may not use it as a pattern for the future. For in doing that, we do lose our freedom, we lose our freedom of choice, and we lose the freedom that comes from the newness of now. Most of all, in replicating the past into the future, we destroy our wholeness. Allow us to be in our hearts, in our soul, in the very presence of our being, that we may embrace all of the opportunities around us, that we may be the love that we are, and from the love that we are, without interference upon anyone, simply be as a tuning fork that causes a higher resonance, a ripple effect, that for those who wish to receive, there may also be blessings transferred, that we may be a living blessing in the world. And as we are, that we are fed by the greatest blessings of the world and our wholeness reinforced. Thank you for teaching us these basic lessons and giving us to understand these. Thank you for being here today and flowing with us, giving us the presence of the Holy Spirit. Amen. blessing conveyance is complete now. Go and rest. God bless. God be with you. And have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.